Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding, and president of From the Heart Productions. Our guest today is John Reese. He's the author of the exceptional book, Think Outside the Office, the Box Office. Pardon me, I'm going to say that again just so that it's correct. Think Outside the Box Office. Jonathan is also producing another feature, and spring 2013 we'll see the DVD and digital release of Vomit 2, the follow-up to the highly acclaimed global graffiti documentary Vomit. And John, Carol, and I are very honored to have you with us, knowing how busy you are with the release of your film.
I'm very glad to be here. I'm honored to be on your show. I know it's taken a while to set up, but I've been wanting to be on your show for quite some time. So thank you for having me.
Oh, we love your book, Think Outside the Box Office. You were one of the first people, John, to talk about the need for a producer of marketing and distribution. And now we see those filmmakers who are using the tactics outlined in your book are gaining distribution and marketing monies because they're following your outline. So this is really what we want to cover today in the show. So first question is, your book says that your unique selling position, to find that and use that to search for your audience. So, right?
I was about to jump in.
Sure. The thing of it is that, I just thought I'd give you an example. I have a filmmaker in my intentional filmmaking class who is doing a feature on the true story of teenager Oscar Robertson struggling with racism and poverty in the 1950s while determined to become a basketball champion. So what would she Google for her unique information from Google? What does she find?
Well, I think just to go back a step, audience engagement is like a four-step process for me. And the first thing is identifying your audience. The second is to find out where that audience receives information. The third thing is to figure out what value you can provide your audience, and then, which is what, in a sense, you're talking about, part of your USP or your unique selling position would be part of that, but there's other aspects of that as well. And then lastly is to figure out how your audience consumes media, which is kind of like how you monetize or achieve your goals with your film. So to me, the first thing that you'd want to do is to think about who the audience for the film is, even before going to Google, or potentially she would first Google Oscar Robertson and do some, but providing that she's already done her research on Oscar Robertson, I think she'd want to sit down and kind of identify who the audience is for that film are. And this is actually the first thing I tell filmmakers to do, is to identify their goals, but that's a separate discussion. But that's always, to me, what comes first is what is the goal, what are the goals of the film and of the release. But then the next thing is to identify the audience. And then, for instance, here, I would start with, the fans of Oscar. Obviously you have basketball fans. But within that, I would start with the fans of Oscar Robertson. And I bet there are some. And you can start, doing some Google searches for Oscar Robertson and fans and, et cetera. The next thing I would do, because he played for the Bucks, is I would research, you know, I'd start looking at the fans of the Milwaukee Bucks and to see whether there's any sort of tribute communities amongst the fans of the Milwaukee Bucks. And then I would see what other kinds of historical approaches, and I would look at the people who pay attention within basketball fans to the history of the NBA and the history of basketball. And I'm sure there are blogs about that that people can look into. In addition to finding general audiences, you'd want to really pay attention to, and this is what I really talk to filmmakers now, about looking at influencers within those audiences. And this is getting to actually who you look at audiences in terms of what are the different niches. So one of the niches would be basketball fans. That's a very broad niche, and you'd want to narrow that down as small as possible to find who the core is within that. So that's like the super core is the fans of Oscar Robinson. See whether there's any tribute organizations, et cetera, that you can align yourself with. You know, also the Bucks, you know, the administration of the Bucks and who's ever involved in preserving the heritage of the Bucks. So I'd want to look at that. But you'd also want to look at who is influential in basketball who is a fan of Oscar Robinson. And that might be a sports writer. It might be a blogger. It might even be a basketball player. It might be a recently retired basketball player, or it might be a current basketball player. You might find that LeBron James has always modeled his life on Oscar Robinson. And to have LeBron James on board as an influencer for your project and a champion for the project is hugely important in getting the word out. So that's why, you know, that's what I tend to tell people to look at is look at the niches, look at the cores, and then look at the influencers who are the super, super core within that core. And so then the other thing you'd want to look at is obviously this is a broader kind of like history of, you know, an African-American history topic so that you can kind of broaden this audience out within that. But then you want to also look at who within that African-American community that you could target initially. And one of the things that you might want to do is think about targeting and who can also relate to this teenage story. You might want to think about targeting, say, for instance, boys and girls clubs throughout the United States that are connected to urban kids and urban kids potentially, you know, with some struggle in their lives, but then could relate to Oscar Robinson. So just to give an example is like immediately how I look at that, you know, just to give some examples of how I look at that film and start to dissect who the potential audiences are for that film. So
that is brilliant. She will sincerely appreciate that. Well, in your list of things that you mentioned, one of them was how do your audiences consume media? You need to understand that. Explain to me how I could find that out and what that means to this process, please.
Yeah, so what you want to do, and then so getting back a little bit to finishing up what we said before, is that you do want to then do your research in terms of finding out who the audiences are, where they gain information, where they are online. Like, you know, do they use Facebook? Do they use Twitter? What social networks do they use? But also, more importantly, also what kind of organizations they belong to, et cetera. And then you start getting a sense of who your audience is. So for this audience, there's probably going to be a fair amount of like older people involved, people who remember watching Oscar Robinson play. So you're going to have people in, you know, the 60 plus demographic, and most likely those people are still going to watch films on DVDs. So whereas there's a lot of audiences that are not interested in DVDs. Like for instance, to use an example, I still haven't decided my Mama 2 is coming out June 18th. I still haven't decided whether I'm doing a DVD or not. I'm actually talking to a distributor today, you know, who would carry my DVD on a non-exclusive basis to see whether he feels there's enough demand for it in order to produce DVDs. Because my audience is much, much younger than a lot of the audience for this Oscar Robinson film. Even though this Oscar Robinson film appeals to a younger audience, there is an older demographic that would also be interested. And that younger demographic may not be so interested in the DVD, but that older demographic might be interested in that DVD. And that's what I have to figure out today is whether there is actually going to be an audience for the DVD of Bomet 2 or if I'm just going to do it digitally. So, for instance, and you asked also one of your questions was going to be later, who are my distribution partners? And one of my digital distribution partner is New Video, and the reason I chose them is because they did Bomet 1 and they did a good job with it. And they also write me a check every quarter and give me my accounting, and they're very honest and transparent, and I had a good experience with them on Bomet 1, so I'm using them for Bomet 2. And So, but they actually said, even though they did the DVD for Bombit 1, they're not doing a DVD for Bombit 2 because they feel it's not warranted within the market and my demographic, which I respect and I actually agree with, which is why I'm still deciding whether I'm going to create a DVD for Bombit 2 for the audience that exists.
Would you share the name of the company you're working with?
Yes, New Video. I think I said it, but I'll repeat it. It's actually not New Video anymore. It's now called Cinedigm. I think they went from, you know, they merged with Cinedigm, and I think now I've seen they've made the full transition that everything, all their email addresses are Cinedigm now. So I think instead of being Cinedigm New Video, they're now strictly Cinedigm. So, you know, and we could just jump in, you know, while I'm talking about aggregators, and I know this is a question for later, if you don't mind, I'll just jump into, you had asked me to say which of the aggregators I work with and what DVD digital aggregators are there out there. So the ones that I've worked with a lot are, or have, you know, dealings with are, you know, New Video, Film Buff, Gravitas, Go Digital, and I'm trying to think of one more. And then, so those are the ones that kind of like, you know, are, yeah, so I would say those four, and I'm probably missing something. I'm probably going to get a really mean call later or saying, why didn't you mention us? We work with you all the time. But I might be forgetting someone. But there's also an interesting company called The Orchard, which is kind of, which has just started up, and it's kind of like they're, you know, they're a little bit of in-between distributor, which is a total DIY kind of pay-for aggregation. And these other companies that I just mentioned where you don't pay to aggregate, you actually, they take a percentage of your receipts. And The Orchard is in between because they don't charge, but they're kind of open to more filmmakers. And essentially, if your film is played in some kind of festival and had some kind of acclaim, they will look at you. You know, so they're another company to think about. Another company that I deal with a lot for DVDs, but is also getting into the digital space is Passion River. So, and they're probably going to be handling the DVD for Bombit 2, and I've referred a number of clients to them to handle the DVD to get the while you are also selling the DVD direct to fan off your website, they will also take it and sell it to Amazon, Blockbuster, whatever, Best Buy, potentially Walmart, although that has its own issues, and other retail, as it were, brick and mortar stores. So,
this is Passion River. Have they been in business a long time, and do they have a good connection with Walmart and that type of distribution?
Yeah, they've been around for a while. It's Alan Chu's company, and you know, they have a very, you know, I've been talking to him for a while, and you know, and so I started sending clients to him last year, and each of them has had really good responses so far, and I mean, good relationships with him so far, the ones that have gone with him. And so, you know, and I've been talking to him about doing Bombit 2, and so, you know, we'll, you know, I actually have to have that conversation with him today. So.
Okay. Well, when you say that some of these, they take a percentage of the receipts, what percentage is that?
It ranges from 15 to 30%. I wouldn't pay any aggregator over 30%. I think that there are, I know there are some aggregators out there who charge 50%, and I think for digital aggregation, that's not appropriate. What might change over the next, you know, years is that these digital aggregators are slowly realizing that they actually need to become distributors. And by that distinction, I mean that an aggregator essentially, and the reason they got the name aggregator is because what they were basically doing is aggregating content, taking a lot of films and feeding them into iTunes, Netflix, et cetera. They weren't actually, you know, doing anything other than that, you know, besides overseeing that process. But now they've all realized that that's not enough, that they actually have to market the films to make them successful on these platforms, which I would is completely obvious, and I totally agree with, that you can't just rely on an aggregator putting your film up on iTunes and it's going to sell. You know, if you think that that's what's going to happen, you're in for a very rude awakening. You have to market your films no matter who's handling it. And any and just to say, any distributor is only going to handle your film so much. They're only going to do a bare minimum of what you expect them to do. They're never going to do what you want them to do, no matter who it, almost no matter who it is. You always have to handle some of the, some or most of the marketing yourself. So, but more of them now are adding marketing departments, And with that, they're going to be adding expense, and at some point we'll see whether they start charging a larger percentage. That I don't know yet. Most of them are still only taking 25%, which comes from the television world, essentially. That's what a television sales agent would take or a foreign sales agent would take, would be 25%, because instead of releasing the film, they're basically making the deal. And so instead of, you know, all the marketing expenses and the overhead involved with that, they don't need that 50% theoretically. They just need the 25% sales fee, you know, theoretically, for the work that they're doing.
Okay. Well, all right. So
as you can see, when you ask me a question, you get very long answers. How long are we on for? Is this an hour show? I hope it's at least an hour with all the questions that you guys have.
I know. It's whatever it takes.
Okay.
We're here to learn from you, and we appreciate it. So let me just say to you that this brings up the most important question to me, because I am teaching the same as you, that you have to build your market, create a database, which is called your audience now, your community around your film. And so that community, then, they are the ones you would drive to the download. Right? That's what your contribution is to the amount of downloads that you will get. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. And if you want to see a master at it, look at Ed Burns. And if you want to see a master, look at how Ed Burns builds up to and then deals with his releases on iTunes. And he really engages his fans. I mean, he engages his fans throughout. But then when he's releasing the film, he really drives them to iTunes. And also Tiffany Schlein did this recently as well, I haven't worked with Ed yet, which I'd love to at some point, but I was working with Tiffany Schlein when she did her iTunes release. And you have to be very strategic about how you handle that release at that time and how you push your audience towards, you know, really helping you with your release. And fortunately, they were in the top 25, and I said, you know, the thing that needs to go out from you guys is we're in the top 25, push us into the top 10. And then they got pushed into the top 10. You need to, but that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't built up that relationship with the audience up until that point. Like, if you're just going to start then, forget about it. But what Tiffany and Ed both do is that they provide tremendous amounts of engagement and content to their audiences. Sorry, there's a phone ringing in the background. I'm going to just pick up and hang up. And they provide a tremendous amount of value, and this goes to that third part that I was talking about, which I'll get to in a moment. They provide tremendous amounts of value to their audience constantly. So, like, Tiffany sends out these monthly emails that have not only news about what she's doing, but news about what's valuable to her audience of filmmakers and people who are interested in the work that she does, connection, like information about, like, for instance, on Connected, about, like, brain research and community and connecting community and issues with cell phone usage and cell phone Sabbaths and things like that around that project. But also she provides, these grants you can apply for, and this, she provides all this information. And Ed does a similar thing with his audience, but it's different, where he provides this constant give and take and involves his audience in the process of making the film, so that by the time that he's releasing the film, that audience feels invested in what he's doing and wants to participate in the release of it. And their participation is to buy it, you know, and to rent it or buy it on iTunes, and that's where they can help. You know, that's where they become part of the, you know, that process, and then they can watch it and comment on it. And so they're involved throughout the whole process, which, you know, is what filmmakers want to strive for. And I think there was a post recently on Ted's blog. I'm trying to forget. I know I tweeted it recently. There was a blog post recently about, you know, that issue of constant engagement and, you know, how filmmakers have to shift their attention from only making a film every few years and kind of like building the audience for that 6 months to a year before that film's released, and then kind of like forgetting about that audience until the next project. What filmmakers need to do is look at what musicians now do, which is kind of like constantly, and I don't want to put the emphasis too much on constantly, but regularly creating content for your audiences to engage with, so that they don't forget you, you know, over these periods of time. And that's why I think part of why I think webisodes and web series and what YouTube is doing is going to be really changing the nature of independent film over the coming years, because, you know, with series and serialized content, you can actually keep that audience engagement. And all you have to do is look back at Dickens, and Dickens' books weren't, most of Dickens' books, as far as I know, I know I'm going to get slammed by a Dickens scholar here, but many of Dickens' books were released not as entire novels, but were released as serials, and so that the audience was with him every step of the way, and they would actually, he actually adjusted the content based on audience feedback. You know, so it's really similar to what filmmakers are doing these days, when they're actually putting up chapters or sections of their work online and having people feedback, what do you guys think of this, you know, and also what web series creators are doing. So when people react to the series, they actually adjust the series in reaction to the audience, which makes the audience want to give have ownership of the project. And that's where I think that you want to look at all these different tools and how, not just how you're creating audience engagement, and actually I'm just coining something here right now, I'm going to actually write it down, is but how you want to create, you want to move from audience identification to audience engagement to audience ownership. And in a sense, that's part of the timeline of your audience, you know, the audience engagement in your film is identify, engage, own, you know, and that ownership is not just selling them the film, but making them feel an owner in the process, so that then they want to participate in all aspects, which includes the monetization aspect of the film.
Excellent. Wow. Okay. Well, all right. Let me just talk to you a minute about marketing hooks. So we covered that with Oscar Robertson. I think what you helped me define, by defining the market, you also helped me learn what the marketing hooks could be, right? You would find that in the material you would be reading from other people, correct?
Yeah. You mean as far as, like, if I'm looking at a project and, like, looking for how to engage audiences with this project, what I'm looking for?
Yeah. How would you find finding the marketing hook for each individual project?
You have to, the first thing you have to do is read, you know, you have to either read the script or you have to watch the film, you know, or watch a rough cut and see what the film is. So in a sense, you know, like if you look at the book and like my four steps, you know, in a sense are, first of all, what are your goals? Secondly, what is the nature of the film, which is what this would be. Third is your audience and fourth is your resources. So, you know, this would be the aspect of looking at the film and seeing what is in that particular film that, not just marketing, but what is it, how is that, what is in there to connect with the audience and who that audience is. And so whatever the and I say this a lot, the marketing hook is going to be different depending on the audience. You know, so what you have to do is discover who the audience is first and see then what interest there's going to be in. In a sense, that's what I mean by value. What value do you provide your audience, which is that step three of audience identification or audience engagement. And part of the value is the film itself, but part of the value is also other kinds of things. So, you know, connection with, you know, the filmmaker or the content, other kinds of assets that you can provide to them, you know, a feeling of ownership over the project. Whatever that happens to be, you have to figure out what you can provide for your audience as opposed to what they can. And I think it's a shift of perspective. Like, I think a lot of filmmakers think, oh, I'm this filmmaker who's making this great work of art, and of course, everyone's going to be interested and want to and watch it. Well, you're wrong, you know, because audiences have a zillion other things to engage with people who are trying to actively engage with them. So if you think you're, you know, and it does work for, there are a few extraordinarily talented filmmakers who just literally are God's gift to mankind, because they create such amazing works of art that it's just, they almost don't need to sell it, because it will just, you know, someone's going to recognize it and put money into it and, you know, buy it in a sense at Sundance, and it's going to get out there in some way, shape, or form. You know, but those films are so few out of, you know, there's 50,000 films every year trying to make a deal on the film festival circuit. There's maybe three of those films. So
yeah.
99% of the other films, you know, you have to figure out some way to survive and achieve their goals. So, and chances are, just by percentages, you know, most of the people listening to this are in that 99%. I would put myself in that 99% of the people who have to really, you know, find their audience and engage their audience, you know. And you know, there aren't that many Marty Scorsese's in the world. There aren't that many, you know, for whoever my heroes are, Cronenberg, you know, Fritz Lang, et cetera, you know, even to modern times, you know, David O. Russell, et cetera. There's a few of them. There aren't that many. But that doesn't mean that people don't make good films that are worth seeing and that there isn't an audience for them. It's just that those films need to work a little harder and those filmmakers need to work a little harder to connect with audience. And frankly, to be honest, all those brilliant filmmakers, there's still someone working really hard to try to get an audience for that film. It's just usually a studio or a distributor who's putting a lot of time into it. But I can also guarantee you those filmmakers are also working very hard during those promotional campaigns to get an audience. I mean, there's no free lunch in this town for anyone, no matter how brilliant you are. So.
That's very true. Well, what I have trouble with, John, is that when people come to me and they're starting to make a film, or let's say they've got 20, 30 hours shot, I tell them that they should do what we've outlined here for starting to build their audience and start communicating with them. And they say, oh, my gosh, I don't have time for that. I'm making the film. So I believe you really should start that as early as possible. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think you should. And you have to start some aspect of it earlier. And I'm going through it now on the breast cancer documentary that I'm producing. And, I'm so involved in business plans, you know, budgets, production, that it's very hard to, you know, do the work that I preach about doing, but we are doing it. You know, most of what we're doing now is more organization and influencer outreach, which is what you really need to start early, and that's one of the things that you can do before you have, you know, Twitter set up, Facebook set up, et cetera, which often you want to have, make sure that you have at least the title that you're settled on, which is one of our issues. We're still settling on our title. But we're still doing we're doing a massive amount of organizational and blog outreach now, and community outreach so that we set up our partners for our release, which won't be probably for another year and a half from now. But we're doing the organizational work now. Within probably 6 months, we'll have our social media and website set up so that we can start our more direct fan audience engagement, you know, the thing is, in addition, we, A, had a plan for this, which obviously, of course, I should have, of all people, I should have a plan for this, and we also budgeted for it. Now, to be perfectly honest, currently in the budget that we're financing from doesn't have the full distribution budget in there, but it does have a good, decent chunk of it, and I've already told the investors that, yes, there will be more money coming later that we're going to need to raise because, you know, we have to be prepared that we're going to be doing this on our own, and we're going to need this extra money, which is a distribution budget, which I've created at that time. But we are raising, essentially what we're raising now is the production budget and the outreach budget, as well as the transmedia budget, which brings me to a whole other issue, is that this film, and one of the reasons I was excited about doing this film, is not just a film, but it actually is part of a major transmedia component. Because when I sat down and talked to the director, and she told me all the different things that she wanted included in the film, I basically said to her, look, that's all amazing stuff, but chances are you're not going to fit it all into one 90-minute film. But there happens to be this new thing now called, not even that new anymore, but there happens to be, but it was new to her, this thing called transmedia or cross-media, whatever you want to call it, and all these other ideas that you have perfectly fit into this kind of project, which provides an amazing way not only to communicate what you want to communicate outside of the film, but also to engage audience, that the transmedia campaign that we're doing is not going to be a one-way street. It's designed as a way to engage audience and to engage audience not actually only within the United States, but we have ambitions to engage audiences worldwide. So because there is a worldwide audience for this film, which we've identified, primarily, you know, if you want the obvious, if you want me to just give you another example of audience identification, it's breast cancer survivors and their families and their friends, and then, you know, which is a huge network of people, and not all of those people want to engage about breast cancer, but a significant number of them, plus all the organizations that are surrounding that and involved in breast cancer survivors. Then you have the whole medical community, which, first of all, the core of that would be the people who directly are involved in breast cancer treatment, but then also research, and then also in general the medical community as a whole who has an interest in this. And then you have the whole kind of feminist women's movement, and especially those feminist theorists who deal with issues of body identification, and that is a whole nother audience. You know, and those are the three kind of separate, and at times overlapping, but generally separate audiences that we're seeking to engage with this project. And the only way, and one of the prime ways we're going to engage with them is with this interactive website that we're working on funding simultaneously, and which is a whole separate. It's a part of it is part of the film budget, but actually is a completely separate budget. It's a completely separate plan that the film all dovetails into.
Can I ask what number, how much you think that'll cost?
Not yet.
Okay, because one of my filmmakers actually won my grant and decided that her film wasn't really applicable to a DVD or a download. It was really an online film, and her budget was $100,000 for the beginning of her website for an interactive site. And that
$100,000 is a lot, but you can spend it, I'll tell you that. We currently have 30 in there to be, as far as the website, the seed money for the website is 30, which we expect to spend pretty quickly. And I think when we applied for a $100,000 grant as well for the same, you know, to fund that. So, you know, $100,000 is not, you know, depending, but it's hard for me to say because you don't know what the scale is of what she's trying to do. So, for what we're trying to do, which is worldwide, multilingual, you know, geolocations, involves a lot of organization interface, et cetera. That's where a lot of this cost comes from. But one of the things we're working on is to get sponsorship for aspects of that. And we actually just brought on board, in terms of talking about how you prepare for this material in advance, we actually brought on, at this stage, we're 6 months into production, we now just brought on a very high-profile influencer within this world to be an outreach person, but also to be the transmedia producer along with me. We're going to share the transmedia producer credit, and he's going to outreach to that world to, you know, help make this happen. And that's why I'm saying, as far as, like, one of your questions, as far as, like, how many people you need to make this work, you need as many people as you can possibly get, to be perfectly honest. You know, and this is, should we dovetail into the 50-50 now, since it seems like we're dancing around money and people and time and things like that?
Right.
So should I just ask, you know, do you want to ask me the question about the 50-50, or should I just dive right into it?
Yeah, tell me about the 50-50. What shocked me was that you said 50%. You should consider that your distribution and marketing might cost you the same amount as making the film. But let's hear the whole Magilla.
Yeah, so that's basically it. I mean, I think part of it, when I came up with the concept, it was a little bit to shock filmmakers into readjusting their mindset and to, you know, and I think it's, you know, essentially that when you're finished with the film, you're half done, you know, and, you know, you have at least as much work to do connecting that film with an audience. You know, I like to get away from just saying it's distribution and marketing. I like to talk about it in terms of audience connection and engagement. You have at least as much work to connect that film to an audience as in making the film. And the reason it's shocking to filmmakers is because before, there was this mythology that they didn't have to do it, that someone else was doing it. But if you look at what that distributor did, you know, it was nearly as much money as, if not more, for many films as to what they put into the film. So, for instance, the film that was sold to Fox Searchlight is the, you know, the silly comedy from Utah. I'm terrible at names these days. It was a huge hit. Anyway, it cost $500,000 to make, was bought for like $5 million. I can tell you Fox Searchlight spent probably at least $5 million to market that film. So in that case, forget the purchase price. Just look at the distribution and marketing expense versus the production expense. That's actually, you know, 5% or 10% to 90% distribution and marketing or audience engagement. Another smaller example is Gregory Bain, who made a film. His first film cost him $500 to make, and then he crowdfunded for $15,000 to release the film. So that's a similar, like, 5% of the budget was for making the film, and 95% of the budget was for distribution and marketing. So to me, the 50-50 isn't a hard and fast rule. It's a way for filmmakers to kind of get their heads around that just making a film is not enough anymore. That if you want to be a complete filmmaker and to really do right by your film and to essentially to, if you want to achieve your goals with your film, whatever those goals may be, unless your goal is only to show your film to your family and friends, in which case you're done when you're done with production because it's easy to give your film to family and friends, or, you know, if your goal is to put the film up on YouTube and let whoever wants to see it if they happen to stumble across it, then you're okay with not saving any resources or putting any time and money into distribution and marketing. But if your goals are bigger than that, which chances are they are, then you're going to need to devote resources to distribution and marketing. And it might end up being, you know, 50-50. It might be 30-70. You know, with ours, if you incorporate our transmedia campaign in terms of distribution and marketing for the film, I can tell you at least proportionally the budget of the film is basically going to be 30% of what the overall cost of the project will be. So
right.
60% in our project, probably 60% of the project is, you know, audience engagement. Let me put it that way. Not in terms of, because that's, I don't like to look at transmedia as marketing, but I do feel that transmedia is expanding the story and allowing the a way for audiences to organically interact with that story.
Okay. Well, let's go to blogging and tweeting. You must be a genius at that. Can you just give us a tip?
Am I a genius? I don't know. I can say that I'm pretty good at it. excuse me.
Well, there must be some kind of tip that really works for you really well, John.
Yeah.
You know, something that really stands out, whether it's hashtagging or something like that.
When I regain my voice here we go. So the few tips that I'll say are to definitely follow the 80-20 or even 90-10 rule, which means that only 10 or 20% of what you communicate to your audience should be just about you or promotional or et cetera. That 80 to 90% of what you communicate with your audience and engage should be valuable content that people want to engage with. So if all you're doing is talking about the world of me, no one, especially me, is interested. You know, I am just like, I unfollow people on a regular basis when I just get hounded with their, you know, it's like that. My film's opening in 28 days. My film's opening in 27 days. And this happens on Facebook a lot. And I look at people and I go, do I know this person? And, you know, not that well. And goodbye. And sometimes when the person's been especially annoying and I know them, I actually send them a message and say, look, I think, you know, this is not the most appropriate way to communicate with your audience. I'm getting really tired of this. And frankly, I'm going to unfriend you right now. And then when, if it changes at some point in time and you're not just talking about your film constantly, you know, let me know and I'll follow you again when you become a normal person again, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it's understandable to do that during the high points of a Kickstarter campaign and the high points of a release, you know, but if you haven't earned my connection during the rest of my engagement with you, then I'm just going to look at you as a user and unfollow you and not be engaged. And I'm not the only one. You know, it's like audiences throughout the world are going to be doing that, which is why, you know, but if you've done that 80% of content, which is what my examples of Tiffany and Ed were earlier, if the rest of your time you are providing content that's interesting, then, you know, then when you are in this kind of little bit more frantic, not frantic, but more salesy mode, people understand it and kind of live with it. And so that would be my primary tip, as it were. You know, in
could
the
you
micro-
give us some...
Thing,
I'm sorry, John. Please
sorry.
Continue.
No. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, could you give us some examples of some of the 80% pieces that you do? Would it be perhaps an article that you find of interest that might even somewhat be related to your film, or some examples that might stand out for you?
Yeah. So, like, for me, I find, you know, articles and things and like that are, I believe, are interesting to the people who follow me on Twitter, and I send those out, you know, and I relay those to them in case they haven't seen it, and often, usually not, you know. And, you know, I do have to start blogging more. I have been a little dormant. Part of my problem, to be perfectly honest, is I haven't, when I do a blog post, it takes me days, and it ends up being 3,000 words. It might as well be a book chapter. So I haven't yet, and that kind of comes from me being an author and the kind of person that I am, that it's just I still need the time to develop the facility with doing that 400-word blog post, which is hard for me just in how I approach content to do. And it's the same thing with, you know, how I create my films. It's just like every little piece is when we do a webisode for Bombit, it's gone over and over and over again, and I'm just obsessive compulsive and a perfectionist, and that's my problem. That's my cross to bear, you know. And but so that's why I find Twitter easy, and I also like Instagram a lot. You know, that's one of my new favorite social networks. And just because for me as a visual artist, you know, it's a nice way to communicate with people is just expressing your visual, what is intriguing to you visually. And I do it mostly when I travel, because a lot of times when I'm in Los Angeles, I don't find much stuff that visually interesting, unfortunately. But I do find a lot of things, you know, visually interesting. And now what I've tried to do is contextualize them. Like, for instance, when I was in Oklahoma City recently and I discovered that was Johnny Bench's birthplace, you know, and, you know, I just kind of tweeted, frankly, Instagrammed it, but then also tweeted and Facebooked it, you know, kind of like talking about how Johnny Bench was my hero growing up. And, you know, I think that some people don't give a fuck about that, but some people are kind of interested in you and like what, you know, it's like, you know, kind of what makes you tick, you know. And so I do start providing more commentary. I'm definitely not the I had oatmeal for breakfast kind of person, but at some point the things that kind of inspire you as a creative artist are fair game. You know, and provide, yes. And that's a lot of, you know, while Johnny Bench maybe doesn't inspire me as a creative artist, it's, you know, it is part of my past, and, you know, it's kind of like what kind of endeared me to Oklahoma City. At the same time, I went to the memorial 2 days before, you know, which I was really moved by, and the number of people reacted to that, either who had been to Oklahoma City. I had a little exchange with Zach Forstman, for instance, about how he went to Oklahoma City, he was very moved by it, and he was going back for the festival in June, and it was a nice little exchange that we had. So, you know, that's what I would, that's what I would do, as opposed to, you know, yeah, you can hashtag and, you know, at people and put a period in front of the at sign. And, you know, and I would say that there are social media experts out there who are better, you know, better at all that than me. To me, it's more, you know, the philosophy of it and kind of like what you're trying to communicate with your communication. And this all goes back to, again, what your goals are and the audience that you're trying to develop, and trying to develop a continuous audience for you as an artist, as opposed to just an audience for your particular project, you know, so that you want people to be attracted to the whole person of you as an artist, as opposed to just your interest in a particular project. And that's why I guess my other big tip for Twitter would be is that I would recommend people doing personal Twitter accounts. You know, and maybe having a project account, but I think what's really going to, but when the project's over, you know, you're going to be leaving that Project Twitter account, you know, obviously you're going to be continuing it, you know, in a sense forever, you know, like I still post to my Vomit account, you know, and, but by the same token, what you want, what people, you know, what you want to do is develop an audience around you as an artist that will transcend each individual project, as well as that people, I think, more and more want to engage with you as an individual person as opposed to this, you know, the team behind a particular project who might be any person, you know. So I think there's a little bit of a difference between Facebook and Twitter in that regard. I think Facebook, it's good to have project pages and personal pages. I think Twitter, if you're going to choose between, I would focus more on the personal Twitter feed as opposed to the project. But then if you have a team and you have the ability, I would also do a project, you know, do a project feed as well, which anyone can do. And we're doing this actually, it's funny, because my son has started this this worldwide kind of educational initiative, and he's only 17. I'm very proud of him. And we were just talking about social, you know, he's just starting to engage social media, and yesterday we were having a conversation as far as, like, how he should be tweeting and if he has time to tweet on a regular basis, because this would be my other tip, is that if you're going to do it, I would do it with some regularity. You don't want to start up a Twitter feed that then you leave for 2 months at a time. So my question was, does Sam, who's my son, have time to maintain his personal Twitter feed, or should we, you know, since we're probably going to be getting some help in the social media realm for this project, that we actually do the Twitter feed under the name of the organization? And we decided at this point to start it, to do, frankly, both. And so Sam will have his own Twitter feed, but then his organization, Exchange TW, will have its own Twitter feed, not yet, but soon. And that can be done by Sam as well as anyone who's working on the project as well. And he has teams around this country plus teams around the world. You know, he has schools in various parts of the world, and each of them can tweet, actually, and post. Whoever he wants can post to the organizational site, but only he will post to his own, not site, his to the organizational feed, but only he will post to his personal feed. And it came up, well, someone else can also use Sam's feed, and I said, absolutely not, that when you're doing your personal feed, it has to be you. You know, because once people, and this has happened a lot, when people find out that someone else is doing your Twitter feed, you basically lose most of those people that you work so hard to get, because your
right.
The key is being authentic. You know, you definitely want, you know, so I'd rather, you know, and I'm an intermittent tweeter myself. You know, there's days when I'm just too swamped with family or production to be as active as I would like to be. But that's my regularity, you know, and I think people, it's now, you know, it's like I do, you know, I don't know, what, 10 to 12 posts a week, you know, over the course of like 3 days or something like that. And that's my regularity. And there's people who have much more regularity than that. But that's what I can do, and that's what is comfortable for me. And it's, you know, so what you have to do is figure out what's comfortable for you, you know, and stick to that. You know, as opposed to trying to do a big burst of activity and then dropping off completely and then another big burst of activity, that's not going to work so well.
Right. You definitely want to keep the momentum going. Can you explain
tagging? Or just the continuity going, you know.
Yes.
You know, not so much even momentum.
Right, yes. Continuity is what's going to really keep it going. And then there's momentum that builds from that, but without the continuity, you're absolutely right. Can you explain tagging and why it's so important?
So tagging is important, and it potentially will change, but tagging is something where you use the keywords, the metadata that you've decided, which is another early step in the process. So like when I work with clients, I give them an organizational outreach spreadsheet, which includes, is basically an audience engagement spreadsheet, and it has different categories, different sheets within it, and one of the sheets is influencers, one of the sheets is organizations, one of the sheets is metadata. And very early on, you want to figure out what the keywords are for your project. And part of what you do is you use Google to see what keywords are going to work best for your, you know, in doing your audience research, you also are determining what keywords make sense for your audience. And so what you want to do is then tag your posts and tag your tweets and tag whatever you're doing with those tags so that people who are also exchanging information or looking for information on that subject and do a search for that, for instance, hashtag indie film or hashtag distribution or, you know, or do a Google search for a particular subject such as graffiti, then that tagging is what helps the bots on the website find your information about that. And
great.
So that's what otherwise, but the bots are getting more sophisticated now. They're actually looking at the actual content, you know,
right.
text streams with it within the blog post. So, but I think it's, you know, it's a good, and it's also, I find it difficult because, you know, 140 characters for me is extraordinarily difficult, you know, and that's why, you know, it also takes me a little longer to tweet than other people, you know, and I always find myself writing too long and then having to cut it down and abbreviate, et cetera. And, you know, so for me to, you know, for me to even have room to do hashtags in there is tough. But I think that there's certain people, like I would look at, you know, I think I always refer people to look at what how Kinnan King is a saint. I don't know if you know those two women from Chicago who are filmmakers. They're called King is a Think, and they're great with, you know, they're also good to watch in terms of how filmmakers engage their audience. And actually, I should tweet them right now that I just gave them a shout out. But how they use hashtags is really fun. Like, and that's what's really interesting is that to make your use of hashtags not only purposeful but also fun, and then that's also what attracts people to you is how is your personality, because you can not only express information through the hashtags, but you can also express your personality through the hashtags. And I think that's, you know, I would say that, you know, is a broader tip that you're probably not going to get from someone else, you know, is
I hadn't really thought of it that way, how it expresses your personality, because I do use the hashtag quite a bit, which for those who are listening, in case some of you may not know what the hashtag is, it's the number grid sign that you use just before a word that allows people to do a search on that word on Twitter.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
We have about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure that we cover this other area, and you'll have to forgive me. I'm recovering from some throat stuff. You could probably hear it in my voice. Oh, great. I hope you're hearing me okay. But you say that you need to build your team, and the bare minimum is to bring in a distribution consultant. When in production would you do that, though?
I think you should bring in a distribution. Well, again, I'm not going to, I wouldn't say a distribution consultant. I would say an audience engagement, distribution and marketing consultant, you know, so because it's not just, because it's really important to understand that it's not just, I just tweeted this out to too many networks. Anyway, never mind. Yeah, so when you're not thinking, that should have only gone to my Twitter stream, but the thing about King is a Think, but I also sent it to LinkedIn and to both of my Facebook pages, and I probably shouldn't have done it because the Facebook, I think it's inappropriate to do Twitter-specific things only on the other networks, you know, anyway. So that when you're doing Twitter-specific, you want to think about, like, what's appropriate for each network, and I just, you know, it violated a rule of mine. But anyway, so... getting back to your question, which I now, can you just quickly remind me of what your question was? Sorry.
Sure. Just basically wanting to know when in production would you actually, you know, bring in the distribution consultant?
Yeah. So I think that it should be actually in pre-production. You know, so basically as soon as you have a narrative film, probably as soon as you have a script that someone can read, and in documentary, as soon as you have probably a treatment that someone can read, that's when I would bring in, you know, someone like myself. But again, it's not just a distribution consultant, because really at that point, what the person should be helping you with is, you know, what your goals are, who your audience is, how you can engage that audience. But more importantly, at that point in time, is what kind of value can you create for your audience? So, for instance, you know, and this goes back to my, you know, kind of one of my mantras these days is that I think filmmakers have to get beyond only creating feature films. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier that, you know, you want to be thinking about what kind of value beyond the feature, what kind of value you provide to your audiences. And that's what someone, you know, like me, you know, or distribution marketing audience engagements, that consultant, whatever you call them, should be able to help you with is how to structure this project so that when you get to release, you're prepared, you know, so that you've done the work in advance in terms of audience outreach, engagement, as well as having the right tools with which to do that, such as even as simple as proper stills. And not just, you don't need just hundreds of stills now, you need thousands of stills now, you know, and you need to be constantly taking stills, you know, and then not just stills, but what kind of other kinds of media are you going to create around the project so that you can have other media to engage audiences with besides the feature film? Because if at the end of the day, all you have is the feature film, you know, that feature film better be so fucking good that it rises, excuse my language, that it is one of those three films a year that pulls the brass ring and can get whatever marketing department behind it, because audiences now want other kinds of engagement besides just say, come and see my feature film. So that's
we
why
have about.
That's why I think the
okay.
person needs to start as early as possible to help the team strategize for that and conceptualize and budget for that.
All right. Well, we have about 1 minute left. Can you share with us a few more ideas on who needs to be on your team?
Well, you know, and it depends on what stage, but it's essentially at the end of, you know, when you're actually in release. So, for instance, when I released, you know, I was the distributor essentially of the, or the PMD slash distributor of the of Joffrey Mavericks of American Dance last year, you know, I had Sherry Candler as the marketing head of marketing. I had Liz and Paula from Crowdstarter, which doesn't exist anymore, but Liz and Paula doing the bookings. I had a publicist, Lynn Hasty, as the publicist, plus I had a trailer editor. I had graphic designers. I had a, you know, a variety of graphic designers. And I also had, you know, an assistant who was working pretty much full-time on it. And that was, you know, the team, you know. And in a sense, what you're doing at some point is you're recreating, but in a much more facile, much more targeted way, kind of what distributors did. But you're doing it in a much less expensive, much more cost-effective and targeted manner than many distributors operate. And I think I'm saying many distributors because there's a number of wonderful distributors out there who I think do great jobs for their films. So I don't want to disparage them. And for certain filmmakers, and depending on your goals, that route might make sense for you. You know, but for other filmmakers, it's not going to make sense, in which case you're going to be, oh, and a lawyer. You know, so those are, you know, that's essentially, you know, and then within that, then you need some distribution partners, et cetera, if you want to go that route, you know. But those are the basics of the things that you need to cover. And there's a chapter in the book that kind of covers that aspect of the team as well, you know. But the team doesn't have to be so big. And then it depends on what stage of the process that you're at. Like there's another film I'm working on now that, you know, I'm, you know, the PMD on in essence. But, you know, very soon I need to bring on an outreach person to help with that film. So, you know, that film's going to need organizational outreach to a very particular community. So I need to find within that community who is the outreach person most specialized in that community to service those filmmakers.
Great. Can you tell our listeners how they can reach you and perhaps share any of the social media sites that you would like them to find you on?
Yeah, they can find me on basically johnreis.com, JohnReiss. And there's a contact section there, plus there's a, you know, a consulting, you know, page there where people can, if people are interested in consulting, that's the best way to do it. People can also reach out to me on, you know, Twitter. I'm John_Reiss on Twitter, and I'm Reiss.John on Facebook. So, You know, so those are the main ways to reach out to me. But all of that's on John Reese. You basically can go to johnreese.com and get all that.
Wonderful. John, you have been a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And is this, you guys archive this, right?
Oh, yes. We have the archive on Blog Talk Radio here at the link that you see before you, on the page before you. So, yes, this will be up and ready for people to listen as an archive as well.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks. You take good care now.
Okay, you too.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.